A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. I'm just going to tell you today, I don't think there is another case that I can think of off the top of my head that is so infuriating, and I know you're going to feel the same way, that you will walk away saying I've never been more infuriated with the handling of a case.
Oh, good. I love these. That was extremely sarcastic.
It's really quite difficult to stomach. This is a case that for many years was very, very unknown. The past, I want to say 4 years or so, roughly, this case has gained a little bit of traction. Still, not as much as we'd hope. There's no words for it. There's just no words. I guess I'm just going to hop right in and tell you all about it. I will say that I had a case ready, prepared, and a case that I was pretty passionate about. And I'm going to do it next episode. So it's not to say that, you know, I'm thinking one is more important than the other. So what happened was, I subscribed to something. I don't know. You know, we do that all the time with emails. Everybody does. We get a whole bunch of junk. Anyway, I'm subscribed to something. And I got an email just yesterday. And it was about missing persons. And it was this case. And, you know, and I'm like, of course, I'm interested. I want to know because I haven't heard of this. And I read it and I was like, oh my gosh, my response was just so infuriated with the handling of it that I was like, I'm diving in right now and we're doing this. And that's essentially what happened. So I will be doing the case that I had picked next time I'm recording. And this one I will be doing today.
Okay.
Alrighty. So the case that I'm going to tell you about is the case of Danette and Jeanette Millbrook. They are sisters, they are twins. And I'll give you the little bit of background that I have on them. So Danette and Jeanette Millbrook were born on April 7th of 1974. The girls were born to Mary Sturgis and John Millbrook. The girls were, I believe, 2 of 10 children. I read that there are 8 children in the family, but sometimes I'm not really sure if they're counting the girls or not counting the girls, if that makes sense.
It does.
It's unclear to me if Mary and John were maybe married and they had their children, or one of them, you know, it's kind of a blended family and they got divorced and Mary has custody of her children. You know, in articles that I read and some quotes from interviews, there's one sister of the girls that is kind of the speaker for the family. And she's mentioned a lot, and she's mentioned a little bit in the disappearance. So I'm not sure if it was, you know, Mary has the twins and this particular child in the home with her. And I don't know how much that means. It really doesn't make too much of a difference. Just, I guess, in terms of knowing who's in the family, that's why it matters. So Mary and her children resided in Georgia, but just had moved to a different area of Augusta. So my understanding is they lived in Augusta, but they moved pretty much like clear across the city. They had an apartment, and it was decided that the girls would finish their school year at Lucy Laney High School. Now, their disappearance is very close to the time that they had moved, which was around March, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. So I assumed they moved like almost the end of the year, like let's say end of February, beginning of March. So it makes sense to me that they would want to finish, and Mary would want them to finish their school year, you know, just to not go through all of that change.
Agreed.
At that point, which would be a lot. So they're like, what's a couple of months? Like, I know in the South, they get out of school a lot earlier than they do in the North here. So, you know, what's April and May? Nothing. No problem. The kind of downside that there was to this was that the girls would have to take, like, the city bus to get to school. And it was quite a distance, and they would have to pay for that. Over time, that's probably a decent amount of money. But that was the plan, and they were going to do it. The girls were known as, I guess, quiet and kind of kept to themselves, and they never really ventured far from home. They kept up in school, they weren't in trouble, and there were no known family issues. The girls had many siblings, as I said, and family in the area for support and had each other, and they often did things together. Now, if I didn't mention or make clear, or I just mentioned in passing, they are twins, and at this time they are 15 years old. I'm sure you could have kind of put that together with me mentioning they were in high school. But yes, that is their age, and they did a lot of things together, which I guess stereotypically is what we know of twins, but that's not always the case. They're not always best friends.
Right.
So this brings us to March 18th of 1990. This seemed to be a standard weekend day. It's a Sunday. And while relaxing, there is some preparation for the school week. One plan the girls had was to do a few things over their godfather's house and earn some money for their bus fare for the week at school. Before this, the girls went out to a restaurant, a local restaurant, like a chicken restaurant, maybe a food chain, not really sure. Doesn't really matter because we know that they left there, went to their godfather's home, and did those chores successfully. Now, I've read a couple of different places that they returned home briefly after that, or they went on to their cousin's house. Now, the one version of the story is that they went home and they kind of said to their mom, we feel kind of funny. There's a white van following us. According to this Medium article, that Mary went outside, looked around quickly, didn't see a white van, and felt really no need to be suspicious any further than that. Nevertheless, they did actually go on to their cousin's home and spent whatever frame of time there. That doesn't matter because that's not the last place we saw them. But they did ask their cousin to accompany them on their way home, which was unusual. They never really said that or asked for that. They had each other. But their cousin's mother was like, it's getting close to dark and I'm not really comfortable with that. So that's a no. So the girls left on their own and then they stopped at the girl's sister's home.
Do we know how old their cousin was again? I apologize.
I'm not sure, no.
But it's not safe for the cousin to walk with them, but it's safe for them to go by themselves.
Well, I did think of that, but I also thought of if cousin walks them home, they have to walk home alone on their own.
Fair.
And perhaps at that point it's dark.
Fair.
So then they go on to their sister's house. And they said the same thing. They said, can you come with us on the way home? Their sister had actually just given birth and really wasn't up to anything like that. So the sister declined as well. So the girls went off once more. The twins then moved on to, it looked like they were heading home, but they did stop at a gas station where they were recognized by the employee there. And it doesn't sound like the employee just heard about the disappearance or anything and said, oh, I saw two girls like that. It seemed as though they frequented there enough where the employee recognized them. So it feels like a confirmed sighting of them. The employee said nothing appeared out of the ordinary. They were acting fine. They weren't acting bothered. They picked up a few things, food items or whatever. And it appears as though they went on their way. And this was the last time that the twins were seen. When they didn't come home, Mary, and I apologize if I'm saying this name incorrectly, Shanta, which is the girl's 12-year-old sister, went out looking briefly before calling the police. This is the part that is infuriating, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to lay out, because I have it just bullet pointed. Timelines are really rough here, and I'll tell you why, because there had been so many back and forths over the years To me, the dates, I don't think there are actual solid dates for everything anyway, but the dates really didn't matter because there's so many injustices here that after one, you don't need to keep some timeline or tally. So the first thing was, as you'd expect, the police told Mary that she had to wait 24 hours before making a formal missing persons report.
But they're kids.
Oh, Melissa, I have no words.
Okay.
So she does her due diligence. She follows back up. And what she hears is, I'm sure that they ran away. Mary scratching her head. They're good kids. They don't do anything like that. You know, they're not in trouble. Their life is good. There's just nothing that would ever point to that. It hurts me to read this. Just generally over the years. There's been one news report that I'm quoting someone saying that they had researched, and there's one news report that aired on a news station. Over the years, the family was told that one of the twins got pregnant and they aren't coming back, with no follow-up on how they know this information. They were also told, and every time they're told something different, I will say that this is the family pushing for answers, pushing the police to do things. And these are the responses from police. They had said that they were removed from the home and adopted, or that they went into foster care, which made no sense because there was no investigation. There was no abuse or neglect. And if there was, why were other children allowed to stay in the home? And honestly, you don't legally just take children without a parent's knowledge. You don't, like, kidnap them, right?
What?
And I wish I could say that these were the only offenses. Scratch that. That's baloney. But I wish that I didn't have to give you other horrible news. The case was closed in either 1991 or 1993.
Closed how?
With no reason. The case was closed. No more investigating. Reasons given were going back to they were either adopted or at that time they were legal adults and able to leave on their own if they wanted to. In about 1993, they were removed from the Missing and Exploited Children database.
I'm confused.
You should be. Ask me a question, I guarantee I don't have an answer, but go ahead.
Well, I just don't understand how they're removing them if there's no answer. They just, like, decided we're good?
Really, if I'm being completely transparent and saying what we're all thinking, is someone made an assumption that these girls left and no attempt whatsoever was made to look for them or find them or follow a timeline or interview the family or anything. Period. And now, just to make matters worse, as you take them off databases like this to, you know, further make things difficult, you know, they could be out in the community and therefore not identified.
I'm appalled.
Then, in looking back on things, the original police report when the girls went missing has been lost. So we don't even know if there was any information to be had there. If there was even a police report, which, let me be so bold to say, I'm really erring on the side of, I don't think anyone bothered to make a formal police report about this.
Not for lack of her parents, their parents trying.
Their mother trying. And I'll get that in a moment. Then there was a body found in 1993. It was questioned that it could be one of the sisters. DNA was taken from the family and this Jane Doe. It was never tested until about 2017. It was confirmed, still not tested. And then it was found that it was not either of the girls. But, you know, it only took almost 30-something years. Finally, with the insistence of the girl's sister, the case was reopened in 2013. Interest and fundraising for a billboard was generated from podcasting, particularly from the Fall Line podcast. Later, with some of this being brought to light, Oxygen picked up the case and did a small segment, not a small segment, like a 2-hour segment on this case. Because of this new interest, you know, that this generated. A letter was sent to the Fall Line podcast, which they quickly handed over to police because they were like, we're not equipped to do this. And it was from someone in jail who had claimed that this person, Ernest Vaughns, was 12 years old when the girls disappeared, and he was a drug dealer who was in the home of John Millbrook, where the girls were on this particular day. I'm not sure if he's referring to the day of the disappearance, but he said that one sister was assaulted and the other spoke up against the assailants that were in the home, and that, you know, it didn't sound very good, and that he thinks that something bad happened to them from that. Police quickly wrote that off and gave no explanation as to why. They just kind of said, parts of the story sound maybe true, but other parts really just don't. I'm not saying it's a direct quote, but that is kind of what I took from their response to that. So that brings us to some theories, and there are barely any because no work was done whatsoever about this disappearance. So is there truth to the Ernest letter? Maybe. Maybe. Although I guess I would find it to be kind of odd if the girls had left from the gas station and went to their father's when maybe their mother was expecting them at some point. And then Ernest had said one of the twins, I think, was intoxicated. I don't know how one of the girls would think that she could get intoxicated at her father's and then walk home when they had been asking people to accompany them on the walk home. You know, why would it have felt safer for them to walk, A, intoxicated and more into the night? So I may be inclined to not really hold a lot of bearing in that story. There is suspected connection between a serial killer that was acting in the area at the time of the girls' disappearance, and the girls fit the profile of people that he was targeting. And his name was Joseph Patrick Washington. Unfortunately, he died, I believe, in 1999 without confessing, or there is no true connection between them and the girls. There is very little in the community that says they actually ran away or left their life, so I don't even really think that I want to entertain that one. And then there is not directly accusing anything of John Millbrook, but there is some questionable behavior. He just seemed to show zero interest in cooperating with the police. And I don't mean really cooperating. I just mean asking, you know, answering some questions, and zero interest in actually finding them. So that is kind of where we end up with the case. And those are the bullet points. We have literally nothing. I believe you did a case, maybe it was the last case we did before Patreon, where it feels very much the same way. Just like, nope, there's nothing. But I will say, I don't think these girls just left. Doesn't make any sense to me. There is no sighting from people in the community. I mean, it's not just one girl. It's two girls that probably stuck together. So if they left their life, they'd be together. And I think it's more obvious to see two girls instead of just one.
I also think that if it's a serial killer, did he normally take two victims?
So, no, he did not. And this brings me to, like, the only carving out of this that I can do is I'm kind of torn between, did the girls get abducted by someone they knew, or was it more than one person? Or more of a Delphi questioning is, were they overpowered by someone with a threatening, let's say, weapon? So for me, those are actually the three possibilities. I mean, sure, Ernest, this guy that came forward and said something, I mean, he could be truthful. There could be parts of that that are true. But for the reasons that I gave, it doesn't really make sense to me that the girls were like, well, we're kind of scared to walk home alone, but let's stop at Dad's and one of us can get drunk and then we'll go home to our mother intoxicated and walking scared.
But Dad didn't want them to investigate or didn't cooperate, right?
I almost think that not cooperating is too strong of a word because A, police didn't even try. it just seemed truly like a lack of interest. Like, oh, they're gone. Whatever. So, yeah, that's it. I'll give you the reasons why I kind of am down to three possibilities. First, if someone had come along and, you know, offered them a ride and it was someone they knew, that might have felt safer for them to go in the car. But I almost write that one off pretty quickly because they had just moved. So they weren't as familiar with the area as they would be in their previous residence. So I don't know how possible that is. That is like a needle in a haystack kind of thing where you see someone when you're out on the road. So that brings me down to, could it have been more than one person who overpowered both of them and kidnapped them? Or was it someone with a threatening weapon, per se, that, you know, said, I've got your sister, or I'm going to hurt your sister if you also don't get in the car or van?
So can you walk me through this Ernest connection again?
So Ernest, maybe through the grapevine, I don't know. He wrote to the podcast that was kind of invested in this case. And he said, at the time or around the disappearance, I was a 12-year-old drug dealer in the area, and I was at John Milbrook's house. There were five or six other people, and that's not direct quote, so I'm not sure, but it was several other people. And the twins were there, and one got heavily intoxicated, and she was assaulted. And the other twin, who was more outspoken, kind of stood up to the other people. And at this point, I don't know if he was not in the room or something, but it got loud, and then it got silent or something, and he believes that something bad happened to the twins then.
At Dad's house?
Yes.
Do we know what kind of drugs he was doing?
No, I don't actually.
Because if he was and again, I'm not trying to downplay any kind of drug use, but if he was selling marijuana, that's one thing. Whereas if he was selling something that actually can create violence or disassociation or any of that, like, that's more believable.
But true.
Part of me wonders if there was some truth to that, because Dad also didn't partake in the investigation.
Right. And I guess I'm not sure. But yes, I think that could make a difference. But I don't know. Maybe Dad's indifference is because he is really into, you know, he's struggling with substance use, and he, you know, he just can't really feel all that much.
So tell me again where you end up going between. They didn't leave their lives, let's be real.
No, I don't believe that.
The odds of them both dying by suicide, I imagine, are slim.
Yes, right. I think so. Perhaps they would have been found by now.
Okay, so where do you end up?
So I think that afternoon, the girls were seen, and that person likely was following them around. Person or persons was following them around, waiting for opportunity. I don't think that it was someone that knew them, and I don't think the girls knew them either. I guess my question would be, is it one person or two? I mean, probably one, because I think it's more common that you'd find a single assailant rather than two. But then I'm like, how did you overpower these two young ladies?
Well, I think we learned in Delphi it's completely possible.
Not if we theorize that it was two people like I think in Delphi.
No, but I think even if it was one, it's possible to overcome two.
Sure, and the means by doing that is either a weapon or that you have a one-up on one of the girls and the other girls doesn't want the perpetrator to harm the other child.
Yes and no. Like, how do we know that they just didn't, they're new to town, they were approached by someone, they were like, hey, let me give you a ride home, it's dark out, and they agreed.
Yes, I think that's possible, but then I put into play the white van that freaked them out. If that didn't happen, I think that your theory is plausible. But I think that throws me a little bit.
their senses were heightened because they were uncomfortable with a van.
Mm-hmm.
Although, what if they were stopped by another car that was like, hey, do you need a ride? And they were like, well, we think that van's following us. And they're like, oh, perfect. Well, I'll quote unquote save you.
That could happen for sure. I still would think that it would be more plausible that this was a stranger abduction, you know, just because of the circumstances.
So I argue all that and I make those points, but I don't actually believe them.
I know. I didn't know that in this scenario, but you and I often do that to each other where it's like, I actually agree with you, but I just needed to play kind of like a devil's advocate role.
I think that there's truth from Ernest's story, and I think Dad's involved.
Do you?
Yes. He may not be involved in, like, actually did whatever happened to them, but I think that there's some truth to what happened that day, and I think that he probably feels responsible because of it was probably his drug use that caused something to happen to them.
As much as I think that it's a very real possibility, you did say parts of the story were accurate. So, like, but the part where he says one of the girls was intoxicated, I
don't think it was on purpose.
Because the girls, I didn't give a time for this, but I believe the girls were seen at 4:30 at the gas station. And I don't know if the girls had a curfew or a kind of expected time to be home. But you have 4:30, and let's say, you know, you're going to be home by 7, 8 o'clock seems at least kind of appropriate to be home on a school night. So you leave and you get to Dad's house maybe 4:45, 5 o'clock. Which, by the way, I don't even know how far the dad lived from their new location. So that might completely spin this, okay? If he's living on the other side of Augusta, then I would think even less. But let's just say he lives in the area.
Amy, they're 15. If they have two or one drink, they're going to be intoxicated.
Also true. No history of this that we know of. They're well-behaved girls. They aren't out.
I don't think it was by choice.
Yeah, that's true. It could have been coerced. Okay. That perspective does sway me a little.
And I think that Dad may know what happened, but like I said, it was his position and his use of whatever that sort of was the catalyst to all this. So we can't cooperate or come forward because what's he going to say? Hey, my drug dealer did something to my daughter. Yes, that's what he should say. Don't
remember get it twisted. Ernest was 12.
Amy, Ernest is not the kingpin drug dealer at 12 years old. He was a runner for someone.
No, he's not. But I just wanted to make sure that I made his age very clear in case you thought for a moment that he was the one.
I just think that, like, he clearly wasn't the kingpin. He probably didn't even know the kingpin. But what I'm saying is someone else was like, hey, deliver this package to this house. He was 12.
Well, let me phrase this very carefully then. Because if you're right, then that means five or more people know what happened to the twins. And while none of this makes me hopeful and it's infuriating and awful or whatever, the part that I am hopeful for is if five or six people or more know what happened, then maybe one of these five or six people are going to break and say what happened. Or maybe we can find some evidence that puts us with one of these people and then we can collapse this whole thing. Instead of the actual, like, bleak possibility that they were abducted by a stranger and we have no evidence to go off of, no timeline to go off of, and no connections to be made, furthering us from ever finding out what happened at this point.
Okay, so, you know, you say five people might know. We covered on Patreon the Janet Chandler case, where four people were involved and likely another 15 to 20 knew. And it took 25 years for some person to come forward.
Which I don't want that to be the scenario, but if we can find out what happened, that would be something to give this family instead of wondering.
Oh, for sure. And every family deserves closure. But I'm saying the whole, like, it's what the I Know What You Did Last Summer. I was like, that's not possible. But, it is. And I think it is possible when you are all committing the same type of offense and something else happens.
Yeah.
And if her dad is not involved and we ever get an answer, we will happily pull the episode down. But I think I have to land that way.
I think you make a great case. I do. However, I'm going to land in a different direction. And I think this was a stranger abduction.
I just think taking two is a reach. But guys, tell us what you think.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a tough one. This one needs to be shared. They all need to be shared, of course. But for the police to do nothing at all, take names down from databases, respect wasn't even given to getting their full names correct in any articles that were published, losing if there was ever an initial police report, lying to the family. As far as I can tell, when you tell the family, we have reason to believe that they were adopted or that one got pregnant and whatever, you need to back that up with, yes, we found them, they don't want to be found, or whatever the situation is. You need to tell the family, like, why that is concrete evidence for you.
Yes.
So share this, because they didn't get that, and everyone deserves it.
Absolutely. And tell us what you think, and we'll be back next week with a whole new case.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.